So what happens when the very people meant to uphold the law, well, fail to act? You know, grievances pile up, justice stalls. Where do you even turn?
It's a tough spot to be in.
Exactly. So today we're doing a deep dive into something called police inaction writs in India. We'll focus specifically on how you might use them, say, in the Calcutta High Court.
Mm-hmm.
Our mission really is to unpack how you, as a citizen, can use these pretty powerful constitutional tools. We want to understand the different kinds of inaction and, crucially, how courts like Calcutta High Court step in.
And it's important to grasp that police inaction isn't just, you know, slow paperwork. It can directly hit your fundamental rights.
How so? What kind of things are we talking about?
Well, it ranges quite a bit. It could be a flat refusal to register an FIR, a first information report.
Hmm.
Or maybe they register it, but the investigation is, frankly, shoddy or just drags on forever.
Right.
Or in worst cases, it could even be outright abuse of power. The fact that this happens highlights a real gap, I think, in their internal accountability.
Okay, so if those internal checks and balances aren't always working, what's the external option? You mentioned constitutional remedies. This is where writs come in.
Precisely. Writs are essentially formal orders from higher courts, like the high courts or the Supreme Court. They basically tell public authorities, including the police, you must do this specific legal duty. They're often a last resort.
A last resort. Okay. And how do high courts like Calcutta fit in compared to the Supreme Court? Is there a difference?
There is, and it's quite significant. The Supreme Court mainly issues writs under Article 32, specifically for protecting fundamental rights. But high courts, under Article 226, they have a much wider scope.
Why or how?
They can issue writs not just for fundamental rights, but, and this is key, for any other purpose. This means they can step in for a whole range of neglected public duties, giving them broader jurisdiction in these kinds of cases.
Got it. So for police inaction specifically, what are the main writs people might use?
The most common one is definitely mandamus. It literally translates to we command. It's used to direct the police to do something specific they're legally required to do, like register that FIR or conduct a proper investigation.
Okay, mandamus. What else?
Then there's habeas corpus, which means to have the body of. This one is absolutely crucial if someone's been unlawfully detained. It ensures a quick judicial check on any detention.
Let's zone in on that FIR refusal again. It feels like such a basic first step. What if they just say no?
Well, they're not supposed to. Registering an FIR for a cognizable offense that's a serious crime, where police can arrest without a warrant, is a mandatory duty under the law. Section 154 of the CRPC.
Mandatory.
Yes. The Supreme Court case, Lalita Kumari, hammered this home. But, and this is important, you can't just immediately file a writ.
Oh, why not?
You generally need to show the court you tried other options first. Like, did you send a written complaint to the superintendent of police? That's under Section 154.3. Or did you approach a judicial magistrate under Section 156?
Ah, okay, so you need to exhaust those avenues first. It shows you tried to resolve it before escalating.
Exactly. It helps overcome that initial police gatekeeping, as you might call it.
What about the other scenario? They register the FIR, but then nothing happens, or the investigation feels completely stalled or biased.
That's also grounds for action. An investigation that's ineffective or takes way too long isn't just bad procedure. The courts see it as potentially violating your fundamental right to life and liberty under Article 21.
Really? Article 21?
Yes. And the Supreme Court, in Sikiri Vasu, clarified that a magistrate actually has the power to monitor an investigation to ensure it's done properly. They can, in effect, tell the police to get on with it and do it right.
So the court can actively oversee it. And unlawful detention, that brings us back to habeas corpus.
Absolutely. That's its primary function, challenging illegal arrests. And some landmark cases, like Rudul Sah and Bhim Singh, even establish that victims can get monetary compensation from the state if they've been illegally detained or faced police brutality. The state is held responsible.
Okay, so if someone feels they need to file a writ petition in, say, the Calcutta High Court, what do they need to demonstrate? What's the essential groundwork?
You need to be very clear. First, show that a specific legal right you have has been violated.
Right.
Second, show the police had a clear mandatory public duty related to that right, which they failed to perform.
Right. Infringed, duty failed.
Got it. And, crucially, you need to show you formally asked them to perform that duty, your demand for justice, and that you tried those alternative remedies we talked about, like going to the SP or magistrate.
Evidence is key, I assume.
Absolutely critical. Collect and keep everything. And for Calcutta High Court specifically, the cause of action, the inaction itself, or its main impact, needs to have occurred within West Bengal's territory.
Makes sense. So stepping back, what's the larger effect of courts intervening like this? Does it actually change police behavior?
Well, it certainly acts as a deterrent. Knowing that a court can step in and compel action or even award compensation makes agencies think twice. And beyond individual cases, big judgments like Prakash Singh have pushed for major systemic reforms, things like setting up state security commissions or police complaints authorities.
So trying to fix the system from the top down as well.
Exactly. Aiming for a more professional, accountable police force. The very fact that courts, including Calcutta, acknowledge they're flooded with petitions about police inaction just shows how vital this judicial check really is for maintaining public trust when other systems might be failing.
It really highlights how Article 226 provides this indispensable tool for citizens like you to hold the police accountable. It's a powerful check. But here's something to think about. We've seen courts order state compensation, but there seems to be whispers, maybe a slow shift, towards potentially holding individual officers more directly liable for inaction or misconduct. What might that shift mean for protecting your rights and ensuring real accountability in the future?